Hello everybody, Julian Charles here of themindrenewed.com, coming to you as usual from the depths of the Lancashire countryside here in the UK. And today, I'm very pleased to welcome to the programme Jeff T-Rex Bankins, who is a Christian minister and performing strongman who has five world records to his name and who lives in Westlake, Louisiana. Now, although Jeff does not take part in official world's strongest man kind of events, he does perform strength demonstrations that evoke the olden days of strongmen such as Dennis Rogers, the Mighty Atom, W.A. Pullum, I love that name, W.A. Pullum, Eugene Sando, and Louis Sire. And I shall be asking Jeff about those names in just a minute. Jeff, thank you very much indeed for joining us on TMR.
Julian, it is a pleasure to be here, and I'm just ready to talk to you because I know we're going to have a good time today, and I believe the audience will enjoy it as well.
Well, it's great of you to come on. I mean, especially after that useless attempt that we had at recording the Nephilim Boys session the other week. I probably need to let people into that secret here. So, I mean, I invited Jeff and others to join us for our New Year's Eve chat, which we have each year. But unfortunately, that did not work out as planned. We had so many technical problems. It was just unbelievable. And trying to coordinate six people on Skype from all over the world at the same time just simply proved too much at the time. And it unfortunately was impossible to rearrange. So I decided to invite Jeff on for a separate interview instead. And indeed, of course, Frank and Cruzy last week and Andy Tidd for a separate interview next time. So it's very good of you, Jeff, to come on again for this, a risk perhaps this going wrong as well, who knows. No, I don't suppose it will. Anyway, let's start with what a strong man is. I mean, we'll get into the ministry aspect of what you do, which does obviously fascinate me in particular. Different creative approaches to ministry do fascinate me, but what is a strong man? It's not a weightlifter as such, is it?
No, most strongmen, I would say, do lift weights to prepare for the strongman events. But basically, you're taking everyday objects that people can relate to, and you're doing things with them that seem impossible. Hmm. For instance, I may take a 6-inch crescent wrench and bend it in my hands.
A 6-inch, can you say that again? A crescent wrench, what's that?
That's an adjustable wrench, a 6-inch long adjustable wrench. I'm not sure what you call them over there.
I suppose we just call it an adjustable spanner, probably.
Yeah, that's right. A 6-inch spanner.
Right.
Or I may take like a steel bar and bend it in my teeth or turn it into a certain shape. Mm. And you mentioned Dennis Rogers earlier. One thing he used to do in his stage show was everybody can relate to a refrigerator. He would pick one up with one finger.
Wow. Incredible. So obviously this is supported from the top. There must have been some sort of strap. And then he picked it up using the finger. But not balanced from beneath, I presume.
No, he was standing on top of a scaffold and it was chained up. Yeah. Below him, and he, you know, picked it up with one finger off the ground. Mm. You use everyday objects, do impossible things with them or things that seem impossible. And usually it's related to entertainment or a certain message you might be trying to get across. And feats of strength are used to capture your audience's attention.
Yes.
As well as entertain.
Yes, because that's central to what you are doing, because I mean, I'm going to ask you more about this in a little while, but you are using this particular skill that you have in order to share the gospel with people, aren't you?
That's right. I sure am. And I just love doing it. I love sharing the gospel. I love performing. So it works real well. And I didn't actually always know I was going to do this. So it's neat how it happened over the years.
So is this actually why you do it, in order to share the gospel? Or did you start off being interested in the strongman thing, first of all, and then it gradually became this ministry?
It gradually became the ministry. And what happened was I had a rough time in college because of some things we'll probably get into later. But once I straightened up, I started focusing on college and I gave up working out, which is something I did since I was about 14 or 15 years old. I gave it up. And when I started working at the job I still have now, 17 years ago or so, I started wanting to get back into working out. Hmm. And what I started doing was I tried to include God in my workouts, just trying to grow as a Christian. Hmm. So I'd just say a simple little prayer before I'd work out. And then it's like God did not audibly speak to me or anything like that. But I felt in my heart that God was telling me he would one day use my strength to help other people. And I wasn't sure what that meant. But over the years, I started learning a few feats of strength, which the very first was probably tearing a phone book in half or a phone directory in half. Mm. And that took a long time because when I first tried, I couldn't do it. My fingers got bloody and torn. But over time, it developed. And eventually I got asked to do a few things at my local church, And then I got involved in children's ministry. I got involved in teaching the 12-step program after I went through it myself. And those things combined allowed me to learn how to be a public speaker. And I even got to tour with a group. I got to go all the way to New York State a few times and Texas and Alabama. And all of those experiences together helped bring me to where I am today.
And you've had television appearances as well, haven't you, in recent years?
Yes, I have a friend that used to be a director for the morning program on our local TV station. Uh-huh. I've also become friends with the other guys that work there, and they let me come on once or twice a year to do things. I even had a world record set on TV 2 or 3 years ago.
And you've got 5 world records. I'll be asking you about that in a little bit. I'm intrigued at what you were saying about how you felt that God was calling you. You weren't quite sure how that was going to work out, but you had that earlier in your life as well, because I remember you saying, I think it was the interview you did with GK on Light Flint Radio, you said that you had a sense of God calling you when you were about 12 years old. Was that to any particular kind of ministry? What kind of calling was that?
It actually started out that there was a gentleman at the church I went to at the time that was, he was a minister, but he didn't have a church of his own. He was just working in our church. Uh-huh. And anyway, he did prison ministry at the time. Uh-huh. And I had always felt that I should do more with God, but I really wasn't into that at the time. I was kind of running away from it. And he asked me one day, you ought to come with me, man. You can speak to these prisoners with me. I'm like, are you kidding me? I barely know what the Bible says except what I've learned in Sunday school because I don't read it myself. I didn't tell him that. I was thinking that. And when he told me that or asked me that question, it kind of confirmed what I had been feeling, that God was tugging at my heart. So immediately I ran away from him for the next 8 or 9 years. And that's when I got into some really dark times. But thankfully, God did not let go of me. And eventually I came back.
Yeah. So you were brought up in a Christian home. But I get the impression that it was perhaps not a happy home. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, we had some good times, but there was a lot of craziness involved because, one of my parents did not always live the right way. And, it just brought a lot of dark times into our home. I got into drugs. I got to, you know, things like, hanging out at strip clubs and being with prostitutes, ecstasy, crystal meth and all kind of other things, you know, just living an overall debaucherous lifestyle. And that started probably because of some of the things that happened in our home. But the good thing is that parent that I used to have all those problems and contention with ended up straightening up. And we have a better relationship now than we ever had before because of what God has done in our family, which is really,
it's wonderful,
really awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So what happened then to change the situation for you? How come you made that commitment to Christ?
Some events happened in my family first that woke me up. I don't want to go into detail so I don't embarrass anyone. But But something happened that woke me up and I thought, you know, I've got to get right with God or I'm going to end up dead or in jail. You know, finally I woke up when this event happened. And so I, you know, I started asking God to forgive me and he started working with me and I started living a Christian life again, really trying to live for God, which he did make tremendous changes. But it took, man, probably from the point I repented and came back to God, it probably took 8 or 10 years for me to get right to where I am now. What he did, it was really neat. He put men in my life that showed me different aspects of how to be a godly man. Maybe some people I worked with were good at handling money. Some of them were good at how they loved and treated their wives and kids. Some were good at, you know, maybe teaching or leading people at church in a Sunday school class or something of that nature. And anyway, God put all these men in my life, and over the course of 8 to 10 years, along with some ministries I went through to find healing, God used all that to bring me to where I am today. Not a quick thing. It took 8 to 10 years. And of course, as long as we're on this earth, he is still working on us every day.
Well, that's very true. And in fact, that's quite refreshing to hear, because a lot of, you know, conversion stories have to do with this. I saw the light and my whole life was changed, you know, on the spot. So it's quite refreshing to hear. And what you say also stresses the importance of people being an example to others in their Christian lives. You know, it's very tempting for any of us to think, well, I don't have this great evangelistic ministry gift, so how can God use me? But it is very important simply to do what you do in your life in a, you know, a very God-centered way. And many times people can see that and be inspired by that example. So I think what you say is very important.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what God has you do. You just do it the best you can. You know, if you touch people in a little way, you never know what that's going to lead to in their lives. Many of the men that have affected me probably don't realize how much God used them to help me and to teach me and to change me.
Yes. Another important point. Indeed, we don't know what impact we have upon people. Yes. So one of the things that really interests me is how you combine the gospel with these feats of strength, because you go to these various venues and you do these, put it in inverted commas, these impossible things or these seemingly impossible things, as you've described. How do you actually combine the gospel with those performances?
What I usually do, Julian, is I introduce myself to the audience. I open up with some big feat of strength and perform them, all the while keeping the audience's attention. And then before the finale, I'll go into whatever message I'm talking about, and usually I'll incorporate that into the feats. You know, I'll kind of mention things as I'm performing, but really the meat of the message is done as I have their attention before the finale. Then we give the gospel presentation or a certain message. Speaking at a prison, I would talk about Samson and all the terrible things he went through and how God changed his life. You know, and then at the end, I'll either perform the finale or we'll just do a closing prayer with maybe an invitation to receive Christ or something like that. Use the feats to capture the audience's attention and put the feats away and just present the gospel or whatever message you're preaching that day. That's how I approach it. And it always seems to work well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Samson. I was going to ask you that, actually. In fact, I was going to ask you a sort of half facetious question to do with that. Have you ever experienced, you talk about doing, you know, these almost impossible feats. Have you ever experienced something where you surprise yourself in your strongman feat and wonder to yourself, is that because God has augmented your abilities, harking back there to Samson?
That happens every now and then, but usually even working out is a struggle and a drudgery at times. And I don't mean that I don't enjoy it, but trying to advance is really hard work. That's how my weightlifting and working out usually is. But I recently trained with the Grandmaster Strongman, Dennis Rogers, who I think you're going to ask me about later. Uh-huh. He only lives 2.5 hours or 3 hours from where I live. And in another interesting thing that God has done in my life, I was able to become friends with him, and he's another mentor of mine. And now I train with him once a year. And I actually did some things at his gym in October that I had never done before, and they blew my mind. So I knew God was in that. One thing I did, I broke a piece of chain with my middle finger. The chain was attached to a device around my finger on one end, and the other end was attached to a metal plate that I was standing on. And I pulled and pulled, and it just broke in half really easy at the time. And Dennis said that he had never seen anyone do that in front of him ever. And I just couldn't believe it. Oh, I was so pumped. Mm. Now, I have not been able to duplicate that at home yet. And part of that was because, you know, it was a training day with him, which is a special thing. And I guess God showed me some grace, but I'm slowly working towards being able to do that again. Mm. But that was the most recent thing to answer your question.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get into some of these things that you do here, because some of them are quite extraordinary. You've already mentioned a couple of things there. The telephone directories, this is one of the first experiences you had. What kind of thicknesses are we dealing with here? I mean, I've seen things on television where somebody takes a directory that seems to be several inches, well, perhaps 3 or 4 inches thick, and they tear that. Is that the kind of thing you're doing?
If I can get a hold of those, I tear those sometimes, yes. The largest one, probably a Houston, Texas, Yellow Pages. It's actually 2 phone books, or it used to be. I don't know if it is anymore, because there's not too many phone directories printed anymore over here. I don't know. It's probably about 3 or 4 inches on one and 2.5 on the other, you know.
Wow. Yeah, I've always wondered if...
I've probably done a 4-inch directory.
Have you really?
I'm sorry.
No. It's just that I've always wondered whether that's genuine or whether that's a bit of sort of trick cinema that I'm watching. But that really does happen.
It depends on how they do it. Uh-huh. If they hold the phone book and push it together where it makes a big hump on one side, uh-huh, and then they pull down, that is a technique that pops the pages. And you don't have to have a lot of hand strength. You just have to have the technique down. Uh-huh. And the way you could tell that is, after they rip it in half, if the pages don't line up almost in a straight line, then it was done with a trick. If the pages line up in a straight line like they were almost cut with a knife, then it was real. And that's what I do. I do it where it looks like it was almost cut with a knife.
I see. So some of those performances I've seen probably are tricks.
Some of them are, but there are some genuine guys out there. And then some people are strong enough to do it the right way, but they've learned over the years the other way and they don't know any better. So they may not necessarily be trying to cheat.
And you break chains and you break metal bars. What kind of thicknesses are we dealing with there?
Let's see. I do 1/2-inch steel. The largest I deal with right now is, I think it's 5 inch by 4 foot long. And I have to use my body to bend that one. I can push it over my leg until it has a little bend in it. Then I put it between my legs and use my whole body to turn it.
Right.
then I'm able to place it on the ground and cross the ends.
What I find remarkable about this is that your body actually copes with this. You know, I would have thought you must get to a certain point where you're in danger of breaking your bones. You know? There must be a limit to what your skeleton can actually cope with. How do you know where that limit is?
Sometimes you find it actually go past it a little bit. And you got to recuperate for a couple weeks and start over. Now, right. I'll tell you, one of the things that hurts really bad is you've seen me bend a horseshoe.
Yeah.
I kind of start between the bottom of my thigh and the top of my knee. Mm-hmm. I put it on the side of my leg wrapped with leather on each end of the horseshoe. Mm. Pull the ends apart. And then that only works a certain amount, you know, maybe a few inches. And then what you got to do is you got to put it on the top of your leg, between your waist and the top of your leg. And you got to use your whole body to push down. And when you get a bigger horseshoe and push down on your thigh bone, man, it really hurts. You can feel it pushing on the bone and your whole top of your leg will be black and blue. But after a few weeks of doing that, your body gets used to it and you don't bruise anymore. Even if it hurts, you don't bruise anymore.
Wow. The body is incredible, isn't it? What it can actually cope with.
It really is.
You've gone beyond that, though, haven't you? You're using your teeth now. I've seen a video of you putting a horseshoe in your teeth and bending it. I'm amazed that your teeth can actually cope with it. Why don't they shatter?
Well, I am using my hand to support it a little bit so I don't turn it and crack my teeth. But the main reason is I'm wrapping it with leather. Yeah. To keep it from moving. If I was allowed to move, it would probably crack some teeth. Yeah. Actually, I almost did that at Christmas time. I messed up a little bit, but I ended up doing okay.
There's a reason why I find that particularly remarkable is that I did crack one of my teeth. I think it was a screwdriver or something I was holding. You know what it is? I was doing a job and then I put the screwdriver in my mouth to hold it in some way. And I just got a little chip out of my tooth. So the idea of doing what you do with that horseshoe just, you know, it just gave me a shiver down my spine. And then you, at the end of that, I think you passed it to somebody else and they tried as much as they could to I think they were trying to bend it a little bit further than you'd bend it, and it was absolutely hopeless for them.
Yeah, no, they're not going to do it. Yeah,
now, you hold, is it 5 world records? What are those for?
Okay, I have 3 world records, and it's an organization called Record Holders Republic. It's just like Guinness World Records, and the people that started it, I think, were in the UK originally.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's easier as far as getting a hold of them and cheaper than Guinness. Guinness, I believe, is expensive, so I've never tried to use them because I don't want to, you know, blow a lot of money on something like that. But Record Holders Republic is just as legitimate, but easier to work with and much cheaper. Mm-hmm. So one of my friends who owns a lifting company that sells barbells and accessories and stuff like that, he suggested that I try to get some world records to my name so that I could, you know, use that in promoting our ministry. So that's what I've done. And let's see, 3 of them have to do with breaking chain with my neck.
With your neck?
Yeah. Actually have something called a neck harness. It's just a nylon device that goes around your head. You attach all of that to a chain that's connected to a device you're standing on, kind of like I did with the finger pull. And it had to do with breaking chain in that kind of setup in several different ways. The one I'm proudest of, I think 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, on TV, I pulled my wife's SUV and my half-ton truck. I pulled them both with my neck while there was a driver in each one. Oh. And I think it was going by what vehicles weighed. It was about, I don't know, right under 10,000 pounds that I pulled.
Incredible. Well, that's absolutely incredible. How come your feet have got enough friction to stay on the ground when you do that?
Well, you just have to lean back into it. Otherwise, you're going to jerk your neck out of socket or something. But leaning into it helps, you know.
Right.
And then recently I had another record picking up 190-pound man 6 times in a minute with my middle finger.
Oh, is this the pastor chap?
Well, he's not a pastor. I may have misstated that. He's a friend of mine, but I was doing a ministry event actually in a wrestling ring. That's what made it hard. A wrestling ring kind of gives. Uh-huh. So each time I tried to pick him up, I was having to deal with the whole ring moving at the same time.
I see. Oh, I didn't realize you were having those difficulties. But I mean, it did look incredible. It looked impossible, to be honest. You know, because the quality of the video was such, I wasn't quite clear what you were using to pick him up. I thought you were just picking him up, you know, with your whole palm. But then when you look closely, you could see it was just one finger you were picking this chap up with. So that,
yeah, it was just one finger.
At that point, I thought, is this real? But it was.
Yeah, and actually, I've got something new I'm working on that I'll send you a video whenever I get it done right. But I actually have a set of wagon wheels that were fitted into a barbell. Somebody gave this to me. One of my mentors gave this to me. But what I've done is I've gotten a scaffold, and I'm going to stand on the scaffold and pick up this entire barbell with the set of wagon wheels on it and some added weight with one finger.
With what? You have a particular finger that you use for this. Is that right?
I use the middle finger. It's, to me, the strongest.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't want to use my pinky or anything like that because I'd be afraid to break it, you know. But the middle finger, it's neat. The joints are very strong, much stronger than you would imagine. You just have to work up right. into talking yourself into doing it because, you know, it's not going to hurt you. The worst thing it's going to do is maybe tear the skin at the bottom of your finger where it joins your hand. So when you get to them heavier weights, you may, you know, use gloves or something. But and I've done close to 400 pounds, like 375 or 380 in training, uh-huh. picking it up off the ground.
Wow. And you said, I can't remember which one it was, one of these performers from the past who picked up a fridge with their finger. Presumably that is the inspiration behind this performance.
Yes, that is Dennis Rogers.
Dennis Rogers.
Yeah. He's been all over the world. He's done lots of incredible things. And the neatest thing about him is he's very powerful. But at this time, he's like 5'7", 5'8", 160 pounds, not a very big guy. Mm-hmm. And now that he's about 60 years old, he looks like an old grandpa. Hmm. He doesn't look like much, but when you touch him, he feels like a brick wall.
Right. Okay.
But he's probably the best performing strongman alive today, at least the best one that I know of. I mean, there's people all over the world that come to him for training. He's also a minister himself.
Ah, right.
And the neat thing is he only lives 2.5 hours from here.
So these other guys, the Mighty Atom, W.A. Pullum, Eugene Sandow, Louis Sire, these are people from the past, are they?
Yeah, actually, W.A. Pullum, I put him on the list because he's from your country.
Oh, right. Is that his genuine name, by the way, or is that a stage name, Pullum?
No, it's William A. Pullum.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, he was an Olympic trainer for the U.K. team. He put out two books on how to do every single lift that you could ever think of. He was also a strong man, and he was also a champion weightlifter. I think he may have been a world champion for his weight class, and he was a very small gentleman. But he was very powerful, and he was very influential in spreading weightlifting, probably 80 to 100 years ago.
Right. So this strongman performance, what can you call it, business, art, sport? I don't know.
It's probably more art.
More art.
Yeah. It goes way, way back.
Okay, could you give us something of the history of this? I mean, are we talking hundreds of years, thousands of years?
I would think hundreds of years. There's always been people that have used their strength in extraordinary ways. And one of the oldest, of course, is Samson in the Bible.
Yeah.
But another one people might want to look up would be Milo of Crotona. Uh-huh. I believe he was supposed to be a real historical figure, but he was in some of the original Olympics, you know, back in the, I forget how many years ago, in Greece. And what he would do, he had a small bull calf. And from the time that bull calf was born, he would train with it around his neck. In other words, he would lean down and pick it up in a squat position with it draped around each shoulder. And supposedly, the story goes, he did that until it was full grown. And he was able to carry it, you know, in front of a crowd at an Olympics game, if I'm not mistaken.
I find that intriguing because as this creature was growing, he was increasing his capacity, wasn't he?
That's right.
Because every time he picked it up, it was that much bigger. It's an interesting way of doing things.
And there's actually a guy in Eastern Europe now. I can't recall his name, but you can find him on YouTube. He's doing the same thing with a horse. He had a horse draped around each shoulder and he was walking around with it.
Oh, wow.
But another famous one that people might know is Louis Cyr. Mm-hmm. He's actually a French-Canadian, and his big time was the late 1800s. Uh-huh. And I have not seen this movie, but there is a French film from French Canada, I believe, that is about him. And he was a very large gentleman. He was around 300, 350 pounds in weight, and he was probably 6'1" or something like that. He was one of the largest as far as achievements and fame of that era. He would lift heavy dumbbells and I think he would harness lift, which is basically you have this big leather harness around you, kind of like you would put on a horse that was pulling a buggy or something, except it would drape down on a below scaffold he was standing on. He would pick up like, I don't know, 15 or 20 people at a time sometimes.
Good Lord.
Yeah, he would do all kind of things like that. And he traveled all around the world. He was very famous back in the 1800s. And Sandow, if there's anybody that's into bodybuilding, they have this thing called the Mr. Olympia, which is supposed to be the premier bodybuilding championship every year. And the statue that they give you for winning first place is modeled after Sandow.
Uh-huh.
Sandow was a performing strongman, and I don't remember his real name, but he came from Germany when it was broken up into other states. But he came to the UK, I believe, and then to the United States. He did all types of performances as well as stuff like posing. He would cover himself in chalk and pose because he was very handsome and he wasn't a big, fat, strong man. He was cut and ripped. He would lift this big barbell overhead, you know, away from the audience's view and then walk out with it. Then when he would put it down, you know, they would take each bell end off and there was a small man on each side.
Right, yeah, so quite an element of showmanship about it. As you say, to an extent, it's an art. It reminds me of performance art in some ways.
It really is, yeah. Yeah. It really is.
Presumably you have to do a fair amount of training for this. Do you train every day?
No, what I do is I have one weightlifting workout where I just lift weights to work out my entire body once a week. Uh-huh. And then I do cardio, which for cardio is a treadmill. That way, you know, if it's raining outside or something, I don't have to worry about that.
Right.
I do cardio 2 or 3 times a week. And then I perform some of my feats actually at nighttime while I'm relaxing with my family.
That's relaxing.
I do just a few things. Yeah, yeah, some things I can do inside the house. And then at the end of the week, I'll have another training day where I just do feats of strength training. So I really only work out, if you count the cardio, about 4 times a week. But those cardio sessions are just getting on the treadmill for 30 to 45 minutes.
Wow.
But
I would have thought it would be a lot longer than that, actually, to achieve what you do. I just would have imagined that you'd be putting many more hours in than that.
Well, you just got to make the best of the time you have. That's kind of how I train. Mm. And I didn't always train that way. But again, God put mentors in my life. One's named Bob Whalen. He's not a strong man, but he is a professional coach. And he has coached me in my general weightlifting and training. And then Dennis Rogers has coached me in the last few years in getting better prepared for the feats of strength themselves. So I've taken what those two gentlemen have taught me and been able to develop a good program that has got me in better shape and stronger and doing more feats than I've done in any of the years combined before the last couple of years.
Do you have to have some kind of high protein diet to keep yourself going?
Now, what I try to do is I try to eat a little bit better all the time, because if I jumped right into it and tried to eat healthy all the time, I would probably quit eating healthy. So I try to eat generally healthy most of the time. On my training days, I may eat some, some tuna with mustard for the extra protein. Uh-huh. But other than that, you know, I just try to maintain a relatively good diet and maintain my cardio, keep my vitamins, and then doing the training I told you about. But I'm not on a special diet or anything.
All right, so you target your high protein intake to those particular training times.
That's what I try to do, and it seems to work well.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask is you have this stage name T-Rex. Is that related to the dinosaur training? You'll have to tell us about that, because I don't really know what dinosaur training is, but I've heard you mention it. Is that why you're called T-Rex?
Yeah, that's why. I picked up this book written by a gentleman named Brooks Kubik. That's one thing that I did that started changing the way I train that led me to learning feats of strength. In his day job, Brooks Kubik used to be a lawyer, age discrimination cases.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, people that are older that have been wronged at their job or something like that because of their age.
Right.
And a lot of those people are called dinosaurs because they're old.
Right.
And combining that with the type of training he was doing, which harkened back to how the old-time strongmen trained and old-time weightlifters trained.
I see. Yes.
He coined the phrase dinosaur training.
I see. Excellent. So it has that sense of something in the past, but also the great strength of a dinosaur as well. It's a nice use of that word.
Right. Yeah. And when I was first learning how to tear a phone book, I had mentioned at work that I was doing dinosaur training. And so the guy that was my boss at the time was making kind of, you know, poking fun at me.
Yeah.
He said, well, with that big body, those short arms, you're a T-Rex. And then, you know, later on, I was like, you know, I think that'll be my stage name. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I've never heard anybody use anything like that, you know.
That's excellent. Can I just go back to your performances and the venues that you choose to perform at?
Sure.
You said that you did in fact have some sense of calling to prison ministry when you were very young. I understand that you want to make prison ministry something of your current ministry. Have you got into that yet?
Well, actually, I started really trying last year to do that. And there's a prison in Texas about 2 or 3 hours from here. And a friend of mine is the shop foreman there. He works for the prison. He's not in prison.
Sorry, he's the what did you say? He's the
shop foreman. Oh. He's the guy that supervises the inmates that work in their shop where they, build things.
Right. Yeah.
He got me in contact with the chaplain there because I had been to his church, and him and his wife were over children's ministry at his church. And they had had me there a couple times. So he was like, man, you need to go speak at the prison. Mm. So I tried to. And y'all may have heard of Hurricane Harvey that hit over here around the Houston area last September, a few months ago. The weekend after Harvey came through, I was supposed to go to that prison. And of course, that messed everything up because the roads were flooded and I didn't know how I would be able to get there.
Oh, I see.
Now I'm supposed to be going back in 2 or 3 weeks. But
I see. So this is something yet that's going to develop, you hope, you feel called to.
Yes, I really do.
So in that context, would you be free to preach the gospel as well as to perform your feats? I mean, the reason why I'm asking is I understand that there are places where you do share the gospel, and other places, say at schools and things, where you're perhaps a little less open about the gospel for obvious reasons. So, I mean, in the prison context, would you be free to share the gospel?
Yes, because they give prisoners an allotted time for religious purposes.
Right.
They have chaplains there. The chaplain I've talked to at this particular prison is a Christian, but he has to schedule time for things like Ramadan, you know, the Muslim holidays, and I'm sure other religions too.
Yeah.
You know, those aren't things we necessarily agree with. It allows us to have Christian time as well.
Absolutely. Yes.
So I'm going to be able to perform for the prisoners and then also preach the gospel to them. And that's when I'm going to bring in the Samson message. But you said something about the venues I preach at. You know, I'm trying to get into prisons. I go speak at churches, children's ministries, youth groups, which would be the teenagers up into college age, schools. Like you said, I don't really preach the gospel necessarily at a school unless it's a Christian school.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to not be invited back.
Yeah, that does make sense. And when we have to use discretion, don't we?
Yeah, you got to use discretion or you'll, you know, I don't want to be obnoxious in the way I do it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the gospel itself is divisive, you know, because not everybody's going to agree with it. But that doesn't mean you have to be, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, because I could imagine you going, say, to one school and preaching the gospel in a very overt way. And as you say, never being invited back and never being invited anywhere.
Yeah.
Or you could go year after year to all sorts of schools and give an example. And the information trickling down that you are indeed a believer, and that affecting far more people than just blurting things out and upsetting everybody. So, yes, I do understand the wisdom of that entirely.
And, you know, I had a really neat opportunity at the beginning of our school year. I was able to partner up with the local church. We were able to preach from Sunday to Wednesday a four-night children's revival with a different message and a different performance every night. And then during the two of those weekdays, we were able to go speak seven or eight times at some local elementary schools, and we gave a message on how to do your best and how to do your best to prevent being bullied and to not bully others. And what we're able to do is say, if you want to see more of these types of feats of strength and hear even better messages, you're invited to our services tonight.
I see.
It was really neat because we were able to speak to probably a couple thousand kids over the course of 3 or 4 days. And I've never gotten to do that before. And I had a great experience. The church treated me well. Them and their kids enjoyed it a lot. So it was a real neat experience. And I really enjoyed that. And we put, 8 to 10 months of preparation into that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose even in contexts where you're not overtly sharing the gospel, you know, even if none of that is followed up on, at least you're getting across very important messages to people about perseverance and about commitment and about being the best you can. And all those things are very valuable to people just in their lives, aren't they?
It is, because every now and then I'll see some kids that say, hey, T-Rex, you know, and I have to act like I know who they are. I have no idea who they are. I just know they've seen me speak somewhere. Like, hey, how you been doing?
Yes, I can almost imagine you doing that, yeah. Do you think that, I'm just going to throw this question at you. Sorry about this, but here we go. Do you think that what you're doing fits comfortably with the truth that, you know, very often it's weakness that God uses? You know, Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, let me just quote this. In fact, I take pleasure in infirmities, in the bearing of insults, in distress, in persecutions, in grievous difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Okay, so that's what Paul says in that particular context. So my question to you is, does what you're doing fit well, in your mind, with what Paul says there?
It does, because it's weird how it works out, Julian. Well, that's not weird. It's how it should work out. If I have ever tried to do anything without including God in it, with at least praying and having the right attitude, if I've ever tried to do that, it doesn't work out right. And like I said, it's taken lots of hard work and perseverance and sometimes aggravation with myself, trying to get to where I'm at today. It's been a challenge for me. It's like sometimes my body and mind don't cooperate in what I want them to do. But I believe a big part of that is so I don't get a big head.
Right.
And when I actually do something that I've been working towards that is extraordinary or whatever, I really appreciate it a lot more. And I think God uses all that to keep me humble. I mean, when you say you're humble, you're kind of not being humble. But
yeah, I know. That vicious circle. Yeah.
You
can't get out of that one, can you?
No.
So you would say you would put all this essentially down to God, wouldn't you? You're not claiming any of this. You know, what a great strong man.
No,
you're led into this by God, and you're helped along at every moment by him.
Yeah. Sometimes it's overtly, sometimes it's covertly through other people, you know. And I had spoken about Dennis Rogers a few times. And if you have time, I'll tell you how I met him.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
There's a guy who I've only met in person once. Dave Yarnell is his name. I'm friends with him on Facebook. He's kind of a strength historian and powerlifter. And anyway, they're making a film about this gentleman whose stage name was the Mighty Atom. He's one of the men I told you about.
Yes, the Mighty Atom. It's mm-hmm. a lovely name. Great name.
Yep. He's a Jewish immigrant from Eastern Europe who came over to the United States, Galveston, Texas, very early 1900s, if I'm not mistaken. He was a very small man, but in his performances, he would do extraordinary things. Like, he had some really crazy stuff I would never attempt. The craziest thing I know he did was he had some metal combs made, and he had been doing preparations on his scalp and his hair to make them stronger. I can't remember what he did, but he treated them somehow. He used those metal combs to tie himself by his head to the bottom of an airplane. I know this sounds crazy, but this is supposed to be true.
And the airplane actually took off?
He flew in the air, hanging from an airplane, dangling by his hair.
I challenge you to do that, Jeff.
Oh, shoot. I've already got a bald spot, so I don't think that's going to work.
Okay.
But anyway, he reported he held back airplanes with his hair, and he didn't just do feats with his hair, but that was some of the crazier things.
Hold on. He held back airplanes with his hair. Are you sure that's not apocryphal, that one?
No, it's true. There's pictures of it and stuff, but he said he could feel his scalp moving off of his skull when it was happening. Oh, it was crazy. Yeah.
Gosh.
Actually, his son, who just passed away a few years ago, was close to 90 years old and appeared on America's Got Talent. I know you have Britain's Got Talent. It's the same show.
Yes.
But he appeared and he pulled a truck with his teeth at 90 years old or 88, something crazy like that. But anyway, they made a movie of the Mighty Atom that started a couple years ago, and it was made by his grandson. They contacted this man I mentioned, Dave Yarnell. Dennis Rogers, that I mentioned earlier, was also one of the people contacted about this movie because the man that trained him was Mighty Atom's main disciple or trainee, I guess you would say. And that man trained Dennis. So these men were called in to make this movie, and they asked if there was any performer strongman Dave Yarnell knew that might want to be interviewed. So for some reason, which I had never met him, we just knew each other on Facebook, he told them to contact me. So about 2 summers ago, I flew to Washington, D.C. one weekend. They interviewed me and took some film of me for this movie. And the movie just premiered a few weeks ago on Amazon Prime. This is the funny thing. For reasons I'll tell you off recording, I got nervous during the interview. So I did not make the movie, but I made the credits because in the opening sequence of the film, you can hear me say a phrase they had asked me about. So my voice is in the movie for about 2 seconds. So I made the credits. Yeah.
For 2 seconds. Wonderful. Oh, dear.
And anyway, during that time, I met Dennis Rogers. And from that time on, we have become friends, and he's been a mentor of mine.
I see.
And that has brought me light years ahead of where I was training on my own.
And so you have an indirect connection back to the famous Mighty Atom himself.
I do. Yeah.
Wow. I think that may be a name I've heard of, you know, before coming into contact with your information. I think I may have heard of the Mighty Atom. He must be very famous indeed for me to have heard of him.
Yeah, he was very famous. He was a vaudeville showman, and then he did all kind of things.
Well, thank you ever so much, Jeff, for sharing this. Well, I'm going to say it's a most unusual ministry, because it is. It's unusual.
Right. But I understand.
I think it's fascinating. As I said at the beginning of the show, I am intrigued by alternative approaches to ministry. And I mean alternative, you know, in method, not alternative theologies or anything like that, but different ways of going about reaching people. But I think it's very important. I mean, TMR itself, you know, is an attempt at Christian ministry, which is unusual in various aspects. So, you know, I connect with what you're doing, although I don't connect in other ways because I can hardly lift a fly, you know.
Yeah, that's okay.
I can hardly lift a pin, to be honest. But it's very, very interesting. Yours is a fascinating calling. Now, what I want to ask before we close is, you know, how can people, and when I say people, I mean, you know, perhaps representatives of schools, churches, clubs, how can they book you? Would they do that via your website?
Yes, they can go to my website, and there's a contact page. When they type in something, it sends it to my email address. My website is www.jefftrexbankens.com.
jefftrexbankens.com.
Yes.
And you also have a Facebook. Well, you have a Facebook personally, don't you? But you also have a page that is dedicated to Jeff T-Rex Bankens.
Yeah.
So people could presumably contact you through that way as well, could they?
Yeah, they could contact me there. And then I also have an email address that's TRexPowerEvents1@gmail.com. Any of those ways they can contact me.
Excellent.
I do also have a YouTube page, but mainly I just put a few training videos on there. It's not something that I get monetized or anything because I have like 200 or 300 subscribers maybe.
And you haven't got any of you holding back aircraft or anything like that with your skull or your middle finger or something?
No, nothing that exciting. But
well, wonderful. Thank you ever so much, Jeff, for coming to talk about this. I have enjoyed it very much. If it's okay with you, I'll put those contact informations in the show notes so that people can reach out to you.
Yes, please do. Yeah, and if anybody wants to contact me about that or about any of the ministry-related topics we talked about, just tell them to feel free to do so because I always like talking to people and I'm always glad to share.
That's wonderful. Thanks very much indeed. Good speaking to you.
Thank you, Julian.